This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. God has given us so many gifts to use for His kingdom. How are you going to use the things He has entrusted to you for His kingdom? Today, Bert Arrowwood will conclude a sermon titled, Stewarding God's Kingdom. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
Sometimes we use the word risk. I would rather use the word faith. Faith is always involved. But even at the end, he says, you know, you slothful servant, if you really knew me, you would have known that I would have been okay if you had just gotten a little bit of interest. You know, like even if you didn't do all of this grand growth, if you could have just gotten a little bit of interest, I would have been okay with that. You know what that is? That's an exhortation. Even now, start small. You know, even now, start small with giving. Start small. You don't have to say, I'm not in a position to do these grand things. You know, Pastor Sam's talked about give up a cup of coffee a week. Start small. Something happens in your heart when you give, even if you start small. So now we're gonna participate together. So we talked about the calling. We've talked about the entrusting, like that God entrusts us. Let's talk about now the return. All right, so we'll start here. And I'm going to ask you to vote in just a minute. So if you don't vote for one of them and I happen to see that you didn't raise your hand, I'm calling on you to answer the next question. And the college students know I do this, so you better vote. So let me start by telling you a story, and then you're going to vote one of two ways. You're either going to vote for the bank or you're going to vote for stocks, all right? So here's the story. You've spent 20 years saving, scrimping, cutting, saving $300, $400, $500 a month. And over the course of 20 years, you've saved $100,000. And now you have a choice to make. You have to either put it at the bank, where if you put it at the bank and you invest it for 5 years at 5%, you would get back off your 100 about $127,000. By the way, I'm not saying at the end of this that to be a wise steward, you buy stock. That's not what I'm saying. So let me just give a preamble. I just want you to know that. So you put it at the bank, you get $127,000 back. By the way, this is about what, if you want to loan money to Palmetto for our land or property, these are almost the terms of that. So talk to Charlie Naselli back there at the end if this is of interest to you. So you've saved all these years, you've got this $100,000, and you've worked really hard for this, and you can put it and get the 127, or you could buy Apple stock. But there could be possibly two outcomes to that. So again, when we vote in a minute, you're going to say, I'm either a bank person or I'm an Apple stock person. And so the first outcome is, what if you bought Apple stock at the worst possible time and you owned it for 5 years and it was a rotten Apple investment? And you put in $100,000 and it was the worst 5 years of Apple and it ended at $59,000. So you could have had $127,000 if you just left in the bank. But you bought Apple at the worst possible time, and now you've got 59. That's pretty painful. The flip side is, what if your timing was impeccable, and you were a perfect investor, and you bought it, and it grew for 5 years, and it was the best five-year return ever for Apple stock? The ending value of that $100,000 after 5 years is $1.3 million. But you could also have 59. So those are your two choices. How many of you would say, don't raise your hands yet, but let me just remind you what you're saying. I would rather have the bank, the guaranteed 127 in my pocket, or I would rather take the risk of losing all this hard-earned money, going it down to 59, but maybe it grows, or maybe it goes somewhere in between those two, you know, maybe not. And by the way, about half the time, you would have done better with Apple stock, and about half the time, the bank would have probably done better. Everybody know what we're doing now? All right. If you say, I am the bank person, I want my $100,000 I spent 20 years working for, guaranteed, 127, 5 years, raise your hand real high. I'm the bank person. Raise your hand. Raise it. All right, how many of you say, I'm the stock person? Okay, so we're probably 55% leaning towards the stock person. Some of you didn't raise your hand, I don't think. But now, let me change the story just a little bit. What if after the service, somebody walks up to you, says, here's $100,000. You didn't earn it. You didn't work for it. It's not yours. But they said in 5 years, you're going to have one of these outcomes. You can put it in the bank, and this money you've never worked for, you never knew you were going to have it. It's $100,000. Or you could take the risk and it grow more than that and maybe a lot more than that. Now let me ask the same question. How many of you would say, I didn't earn this, and you know, but I still want to put it in the bank? Raise your hand. Bank people? All right, how many of you would say, I'll do stocks now? Raise your hand. All right, so it's probably 90% stock now. Now, do you see what we're talking about here? Do you see how the ownership of it gets inside of you and says, wait a minute, I worked really hard for this. I can't give it up. What we're saying is God gives you all of life. You can take risk. What if I said this? What if I said, same thing, somebody's going to give you $100,000 and they guarantee you this would be the outcome. 100% guaranteed you're going to get this. We would all do that, right? We would all take that risk. What I'm telling you today is that is true of what God says about his kingdom. This is the outcome every single time. And it doesn't mean that you're going to be a millionaire. What it means is if you trust God with the capital he's giving you, the result, no matter what area of life it's in, you're going to have results that look like this. You're going to have this true joy that this parable talks about that isn't within your power. It actually comes from God. So the return is always there. And then lastly, in this, the kingdom partnership, the little interesting thing at the end of the parable is the way I've always viewed this parable is you have the guy with five talents who grows five talents more. The master comes back and he says, here's your 10. And he gives them back to the master, right? Isn't that the way you've kind of read it? You know, gives them back to the master. And then the same with the two talents. But at the end, when the guy with one talent didn't grow it, do you remember what Jesus said? The master said, he said, take his talent and give it to the one that has 10. He still has 10. There is an abundance that's taught here. And I don't really know where all of that goes. I don't really know how that plays out in every area of our life. But the partnership is this. When you trust Jesus with your capital, he gives you back an abundance that becomes yours and his together. And there's this true joy that happens that is insurmountable. So that's what stewardship looks like. It looks like a call. We're entrusted. We have time to do this. There's always a return. And there's this kingdom partnership. And then what are the results? What are the results of our stewardship? First of all, the results of stewardship are it glorifies our master. When our master says to the steward, when the steward comes back in the first two and says, master, we've doubled, he says, well done, good and faithful steward. Well done, good and faithful. He says, you have been faithful over a little, and I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. When I studied this out, the idea of the results, the idea of the method we go through, and the motivation, these are very important. As you steward God's capital, there will always, always be results with that, and we want those results to be well done. It means that the results that this steward achieved for God were well done results. But not only were there good results, the results were good because the method that he went about growing God's kingdom was the results. It wasn't just growing wealth or relational capital or human capital just for myself. It's that these results were good for the master's kingdom. That's what our results should be focused on. And then the idea of faithfulness means my motivation behind this, my purpose in life is to serve this master. And when we do all of those things, the glory is the master's glory. It's not our glory. Like I think sometimes we look at people who we perceive to be really good stewards, and we say, I hope I can be a good steward like that person. And really, what it should be is we should be able to look around and say, I see God in the way that person has stewarded their time, their talents, their treasure, their emotion, the emotional strains of what they've gone through. I see God in the way they've stewarded that. And it actually brings glory to the master, not to the steward. And I think we miss that in the Christian world today. I think we miss what we would have. So my prayer is that our stewardship would glorify the master. But stewardship also gives us another gift, and that is it will reveal our sin. And I want us to take some time on this because we are learning from the slothful steward here about how stewardship reveals our sin. There's three points under this. When it comes to stewardship, if we don't get what we want, we often blame the master or we blame others. We often live in fear or we often run and hide from accountability and responsibility. So there's three, if you're taking notes, there's three little words I'd write next to each of these. We either fight, we either fear, or we either flee. These are generally the wrong responses to stewardship. And fighting here is blaming. Look at verse 24. Look at verse 24. The slothful steward, when the master came back, said this. He that received the one talent came forward and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man. You were reaping where you did not sow, and you gathered where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid. So he started off by blaming him. He said, I was afraid, and I went and I hid your talent in the ground. Here, have what is yours. Now, there is a recognition here that there's something that comes from the master. And many of us in our life, we can recognize that there's truth. We can recognize that there's something that comes from the master, but we segment it off. And he says, here, you have this back. It's yours. And the master responded back to him. And he says, you wicked and slothful servant. And then he asks a question. He says, you knew that I reaped where I have not sown, and I gathered where I scattered no seed. So if you knew this about me, then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers. And at my coming, I should have received what was my own with interest. You know, our stewardship will often lead us to blame others. Years ago, I was talking to a young man who grew up in a Christian home, and he was not fully convinced that faith or that Jesus was the right approach. And what he kept coming back to is, I know some Christians who are the most horrible people ever in the world. And how can they be that horrible and they believe something that's true? I can't believe that that's true because these are horrible people. And what he didn't say was throughout history, there's been hundreds of millions of people who have lived for Jesus, who have died for Jesus, and who have literally changed the world for Jesus. But let's not talk about that. Let's not talk about the clear evidence. Let's talk about these people I know who have hurt me, who have disappointed me, or who have done horrible, awful things. And they blame other Christians for their faith. We blame our parents for things. Often, you know, we blame our parents for mistakes that they made. Poor pastors, you guys get blamed for a lot of stuff, you know. You blame the pastor, and so, you know, oh, I don't like this or that, so I'm not going to give any more to the church because I'm not getting what I want, you know. And we blame the pastors. We blame circumstances. We blame politics. Like this year, how often are you going to blame politics for your negative mood or for your negative outlook on the world? We blame others. But at the end of the day, when you blame, you're really blaming God. Like at the end of the day, when you lay blame, you're saying, God, I deserve something different. And what we really do is blame God. And, you know, when you blame others for the problems of the world or for the hurt in your life, and you assign that blame to God, it's like this. It's like you going to Ford and saying, Ford, why did you build a car that looks like this? You know, you should have never built this car, you know. By the way, can you guys see this is a Ford F-150? This is the most popular, you know, car out there. And so if you go to Ford and you say, you should have never built this car, why did you do this? That's like blaming God for Christians that hurt you or that fail you. It's not God's fault. We live in a fallen world. And if you assign your faith long-term to Christians who disappoint you, that's like blaming Ford for building this. By the way, y'all know what Ford stands for, right? Found on road dead, right? So, but to be fair, if you bought a Ram truck and you drove it for years and you set it on fire and you did all of those things that happened to this truck, this is what the Ram truck would look like. I'm just saying, this is what the Ram would look like. But friends, we tend to blame God for the actions of others. That's a very scary place to be. That's where the slothful, wicked servant was. The slothful, wicked servant was blaming the master and not believing the truth. The second thing is living in fear. What are you afraid of? Here he said, Master, I was afraid. He was afraid because he thought he knew the master, and he thought the master was a hard, hard man. But did he really, is any of the other evidence with the other two? I love that there were two other servants, by the way, because the evidence is very clear. There's two that the master was very generous to. The master actually did give them the seed capital, right? He actually sowed the seed. He gave them the capital, and he gave them the ability to go out and grow the capital, and he gave them time to grow the capital. It sounds like the master was a pretty generous guy, but this servant did not know that about the master. He didn't know that he had given capital to be entrusted. And so he was scared. He was scared of living for the master because he did not know. What are you afraid of doing for Jesus? Are you afraid of truly allowing him control over your life, your career, your kids, your money? And then the third result, stewardship reveals our sin because we tend to run and hide. We run from accountability. We run from responsibility. And by the way, am I the only one that sometimes thinks about just running, you know, like I'd like to just get away. I don't know if that comes to anybody else's mind. Like if I could just get away and maybe buy property somewhere. And so I have a question for you. Where would you run to if you had the ability to do that? Like where would you run? You know, some of you would run to like, have you ever seen these shows about owning your own private island? You know, and like you watch that and you're like, that would be so nice, you know, if I had my own island and I'd go once a week to get groceries and come back, and then about a week into that, you would be absolutely miserable. But some of you want to go to the beach and have your own private island. Some of you want to go to the mountains and have your own little stream that flows through and just be away from everybody and watch the deer and the elk come through, and it would just be so fulfilling. And then some of you would want to run to the city where you're around millions of people, but you can hide, and you have access to everything you would want. Millions of people, but you're hiding in the midst of all of them. By the way, some of you, especially like college students, you're on campuses with thousands of students every day, and you feel so alone. You know, like why is that? You know, are you running from the master? Are you trying to hide? So we all think that the idea of getting away, running and hiding and fleeing from our responsibility is the right thing. So what we do is we organize our life to where we don't have to have accountability. We don't get involved in a ministry because then people are going to expect me to be a part. And I don't want to be a giver because if I give somebody something, they may ask for more later, you know? And so we come up with all these excuses about why we don't have to be accountable, why we don't have to be involved, and we are fleeing just like the wicked servant. And then what are the results at the end? What we see is, sorry, got too far ahead. There are always, always rewards. Always. Again, I want us to change our thinking about, I hope I'm a good steward, and I hope I'm rewarded. There will always be rewards. The question is, are you going to have the slothful servant award? Are you going to have the faithful servant award? And we know from this passage that Sam read earlier, we know that the slothful servant reward is loss, and ultimately, judgment. It's loss and judgment. I'm going to take the one that I gave you, and I'm going to give it to the one that has 10. And I'm going to cast you out. So if you're living a life of a slothful servant where you're blaming others, you're living in fear, you're running and hiding from accountability, this is the result that's going to come. But there's also another side to it, the faithful servant award. And I just love the phrase that he gives the first two servants. After he says, well done, good and faithful servant. I've set little before you and now there's much. I'm going to make you over much. And then he uses this phrase, enter into the joy of your master. Enter into the joy of your master. When you are a wise servant, there is supernatural joy that comes that you can't create. It only comes from God as we are wise stewards, as we are stewards that are growing the kingdom, as we are stewards who are using what he's entrusted us for kingdom purposes. And that joy is very powerful. And then there's an abundance that comes from that. C.S. Lewis said this about joy. It's one of my favorite quotes. He said, I doubt whether anyone who has tasted it, and what he's talking about there is true joy. I doubt anyone who has tasted it would ever, if both were in his power, exchange it for all the pleasures in the world. But then joy is never in our power, and pleasure often is. Entering into the joy of your master comes after a long life of God's calling, of us entrusting well and investing what he's given us, of time. This is why it's so hard, by the way, because all along the way, we can exit the joy highway and hop on the pleasure highway. You know, all along the way, pleasure is very easy to grab onto. True joy is not within our power. But what he says is when we give generously, when we live this way, you will have taste of this joy. It says joy is never in our power, but pleasure often is. And in fact, this idea that is totally unique to the Christian belief system. So if you're here today and you have doubts about your faith, or you're not really sure about this Jesus thing, this is what the gospel is all about when it comes to joy. And it's this. It says, and you know this verse, Hebrews 12:2, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, who's the author and he's the perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured this cross, scorned its shame, and now he's seated at the right hand of the throne of God. True joy for Christ was going to the cross. And when we say, okay, Jesus went to the cross because he gave us the incredible gift of salvation, and that is true. But the Bible says the real reason that Jesus died on the cross was not just to give you a gift of salvation. It was to fulfill the will of the Father who sent him. Like Jesus says, the joy is me fulfilling the will of the Father. And the byproduct is we get salvation. We get changed lives to be able to live and to be able to follow and to be able to trust and to be able to use well what he's entrusted to us. That's what the gospel is. This is where true joy comes from. So we're going to close, and I'm actually going to close the way I did a year ago in our closing prayer. And in just a minute, I'm going to ask you guys to stand. And when I ask you to stand, the worship team is going to come on up, and they're going to get set to sing. But as you stand in just a minute, what I would ask you is as I pray and as I close in prayer, if you would just take your hands and just hold them out in front of you if you're comfortable doing that. And there's two reasons for that. Reason number one is we need to pray as stewards that we don't hold on tightly to the pleasures of this world. We need to have a hand that's not grabbing the safety and security that money promises, or the feeling of being fulfilled if the right people are with me. We need to say, no, God, I'm not going to hold tightly to these things. Yes, they're gifts from you that I'm entrusting, that I want to use well and steward and trust and be a trustee over. And then the other open hand says, God, will you please place in my hands the things that you need me to do? Will you please entrust to me the capital, whatever it looks like, that I need to use for your glory? For some of you, it's financial capital. And you need to say, I'm not going to hold it tightly. I'm going to allow God, when he entrusts it to me, to use it for him. For some of you, it's your human capital. Some of you, it's your time. I can't make that decision for you. That's between you and the Holy Spirit. But we're going to pray that we would have wisdom with what our master has entrusted to us, the entrusted capital. I want to hold these lightly, and I want to follow the Spirit boldly with what he's placed in our hands. And then I'm going to pray that we'd be forgiven, that we'd ask forgiveness for when we blame others or we live in fear or we run from God. And then we want to praise God because of what he has done.
Thank you, Bert. Today's speaker, Bert Arrowood, is the College Ministries Director at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Come join us for our morning worship service every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Or you can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is recorded by the audio team at PBC and produced by CJ Billiou. Join us again next time, so together we can grow in grace.